Hello and welcome to the FinTech Newscast. My name's John, and this week we'll be talking about the three waves of FinTech. Try to guess what wave we're in now, if you're not drowning. Revolut gets $500 million to fund their global expansion. Nice little chunk of change there for them. And plenty more. Please hit subscribe to keep up with these and all the latest in FinTech news. All right, we got some big deals, some big changes, and a little bit of problems here and there in FinTech. This week, I have Steve with me.
Hey, John. Happy Facebook Payday.
Happy Facebook Payday. Yeah, they launched some new product, right?
They launched it this week. It's only on Messenger now, but I think it'll be deployed to WhatsApp, Instagram, and the main Facebook
I'll do
app.
That thing where you complain about the 1.0 version only on Messenger. Oh, it's worthless. It's going to die. It's no good.
Yeah, it's no good. It's not good.
I predict one trip to Washington, D.C. for Mark Zuckerberg as a result of this.
One of many more.
At least. Yeah. Every time he does something in finance. There's going to be some kind of announce, or they'll drag him over to DC now.
They absolutely will.
Yeah, he'll have a favorite restaurant and everything.
Yeah.
So what is going on with the fintech waves that are crashing on our shores?
Sure. So this is, people always like to describe things in either waves or stages, and
Fundamental changes happen once in a while.
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah, you have the new wave, I like cold wave music. It's just, it's all about the waves, right? So this is the CEO of a company called Tally, which is an automated sort of PFM company, come up with this framework to understand the waves of fintech. And it's a bit self-serving, but it's actually kind of an interesting framework to understand where we are in the fintech space. So he basically described three waves, right? The first one is post 2007 and 8 financial crisis, we had things like Lending Club and Prosper. They could, lend you money. They could help you cover expenses and kind of bridge the gap between what you needed and what a traditional mainstream bank could give you.
And the pullback after the 2008 crisis really opened up the door, created an opportunity for these guys, right?
Absolutely.
Banks weren't lending, right?
Banks were not lending. It was very hard to get credit, but these companies were using more developed algorithms to underwrite clients. And then, I mentioned Lending Club, but also companies like Prosper, and then to a lesser extent, companies like SoFi that focus on another aspect of U.S. consumer debt, which is, student loans and student debt. The second wave of fintech is sort of the one we're still in right now, and that's all driven by neobanks and free services. So you mentioned Revolut earlier. We'll get into them in a few minutes, but, there's been a lot of interesting challenger and neobanks, both in the U.S., Europe, and Asia. So, again, we've mentioned Revolut, but also companies like Chime and Monzo in the U.K. and Simple as well. So, and then also free services like Robinhood, which have created a lot of price pressure for the incumbents to lower their trading prices.
Yeah, and also kind of integrating all those services together. They're not just one-trick ponies anymore.
Exactly. They're sort of they started as one-trick ponies, but now they've become, circus ponies. They have a couple.
Well,
of
they want to be full service to create make full use of their brand and their client connections, even if they're doing it through partner banks or back end through having their back end through some other reg tech. It's kind of white labeling. You can build up quickly that way, we've seen. So there's a lot of cool interconnections with these neo full service, attempting to be full service.
Neo full service and also free services as well. That's a key issue here, is that a lot of these services are free or very, very low cost.
That's interesting, because the other trend now we see kind of after this long wave of money going into fintech is this new focus on profitability. It's not like, when you're smaller, it makes sense. You're going to lose money as you expand and build up your name and build up your systems and things like that. But investors have put, almost $40 billion, I think it was, into fintech in 2018, last year. And that works out to like 2,300 rounds of financing.
That's a lot of financing. That's a lot of rounds.
That's a lot of PowerPoints you have to sit through.
So many pitch decks.
To stay awake.
So many pitch decks, yeah.
So now that that expansion's happened and we have these Chimes and Robin Hoods that do have a name and a lot of customers, now the next step is to try to get profitable. And so investors are going to be a little bit more resistant to take a closer look at financials. And of course, we have to mention WeWork hasn't helped them.
Everybody
in tech is giving WeWork the side eye if they were gonna ask for money soon.
Yeah, yeah. I heard that there was some event a few weeks ago where the CEO of Uber basically said to a room full of people, "We are not WeWork," and everyone just kind of laughed.
Yeah,
because they've lost 40% of their value since they IPO'd last year.
That's how every earnings call is going to start.
Right, we are not WeWork. We are profitable
for every company that doesn't make money. For sure.
Yeah,
we have a plan.
We do. Yeah, we all have a plan.
Like the Cylons, we have a plan.
Exactly. The current or incoming wave, if you will, the cresting wave, is actually the third wave, which is more around automation. So this is, again, from the CEO of a company called Tally, but he argues that after we have all these free services, after we kind of fill the gap that Main Street banks didn't...
You'll have to fire everybody to cut costs and automate them?
Sort of, to an extent. The issue is we'll give you automated advice. So, you know, his argument is that we don't want to just have free stuff. We want to have free stuff that tells us what to do based on our personal profile. So look at all my data, look at my cash flow, look at my needs and my goals and my needs. Look at all my Facebook posts,
everything
my LinkedIn.
I buy everywhere.
All my TikToks, all my purchases, and make a decision for me. Whether that be which card to pay first or which card to even go after. But it's again, the whole concept is automation and having a very personalized service.
I like the way the guy from Uber Money put it when we were looking at them is we can never tell you what to do. We're going to be like the map application. If you make a change, we'll just kind of reroute your future planning to still get you to the same goal.
It's an awesome analogy.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like it.
And then pretty soon you'll spend enough where it's impossible to get to your destination.
Right.
If you do this, it's up to you.
Yeah. Awesome. Anyway, those are the three waves. To recap, the first wave was Lending Club and extending credit and SoFi and things of that nature. The second wave is free services that are really easy to use with a good UI, good UX, like Chime, N26, and Robinhood. And the third wave will be sort of companies that are more early stage. Now they focus, again, on automating your finances and just giving you recommendations based on John, not a customer segment, but it'll be a customer segment of one.
John, that still sounds pretty generic.
It sounds very generic. Or Steve, for that matter, yeah.
Yeah, right. Well, one thing I saw that was interesting about the overall financial environment is that student loans are so burdensome for people in their 20s and 30s.
Horrendous.
Hopefully you're done after that, but a lot of people aren't.
Thankfully, yeah.
Into their 40s. But that's going to limit the market for a lot of these newer services and lending growth because there's just no way. The younger people are focused on paying off their student loans first before they get, you know, the nicer car or buy a house.
Or have a kid or start a business. Yeah, it's actually, yeah. I think that there's sort of an understudied issue with student loan and that I think it'll lead to lower business formation. It'll lead to delaying what used to be more, you know, stages in life in terms of having a family, buying a house, buying a car. Like, it just creates, you know, I think it's really dragging down people who have the monkey on their back, which is really horrible.
Yeah. That's right. So, yeah, that's another trend to look out for.
Yeah.
All right. But none of this is a problem for Revolut, apparently, who is working on automating and global expansion. And just got not only did they just get $500 million, by the way.
Nice chunk of change.
That's right. That's not enough. So they're working on a later stage of up to $1 billion in convertible debt, according to their CEO.
Jeez.
Nikolay Storonsky.
Sure.
He just had an interview with Reuters, and he went into some interesting things that are the pain points and the struggles for a lot of tech companies, even though they're they're a little bit further down the line. He mentions that he spends about 60% of his time just on hiring.
That is incredible.
For the CEO, that's, I guess that's a key. You know, you have to make those are key decisions.
But I have to wonder, why is the CEO getting involved in every hiring decision?
Well, no, he doesn't get involved in every hiring decision, but... there is a lot of management positions and executives. They said they're hiring, as well as senior executives for management positions, they're hiring tech developers, data scientists, support people. Of course, they need compliance experts.
Mm-hmm.
We highly recommend getting that in order as you grow your fintech.
Yes, we do.
So it's just a huge burden. And you know, hiring is you have to kiss a lot of frogs. So he has to. He's out kissing frogs 60% of his time to find those few princes. And some of those princes, once you hire them, they turn into frogs.
I'm sure they do.
I've seen it happen.
I read a really interesting article in the journal maybe earlier this week. They're saying that there's been a tremendous increase in ghosting from both employees and employers. So both employees saying, I'm just going to drop off in the middle of
a
recruiting cycle.
That's always happened. I've never...
Either the recruiters just stop replying or the employers are just like, in some cases, they even accept the job and just never show up the first day, which is just incredible to me.
I had 3 offers, you know, I couldn't be bothered.
Exactly. It's a hot job market.
Nice.
It's just what it is. Yeah, sorry.
It's just like a social media kind of influence. You know, you ghost once you're done with the relationship.
You're ghost. You never respond. Just,
In my day, we wrote a letter to say we're not interested.
Yeah, exactly.
And the stamp cost 2 bits. One thing that the article mentions that's interesting is that they say Revolut and other large fintechs, I guess, has been a positive influence on the established banks because they have such nice apps, great money management tools, like you said, PFMs. And great offers on foreign exchange and other services and, you know, free trading, which we saw had a very direct influence just recently, if you're on brokerages.
Mm-hmm.
And this is helping to improve the overall market substantially, which we're kind of hoping for anytime there's a challenge, right?
Yeah, I think this is sort of an unsung part of fintech is that it's actually making everyone a little better. You know, both your B of A app and your Chase app is more powerful, more intuitive, and better designed now than it was 5 years ago, precisely because of the competition from people like Revolut and Chime and N26.
Even though all the best UI designers have departed the larger
banks,
that's
a different story.
Maybe.
But they can do it. But
they still get the B team
there. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, which is pretty good. It's a lot better than the D team.
You're listening to the B team, by the way.
Yeah.
So they're also going through expansion. They just launched in the U.S. and Singapore in 2019.
It's funny. I haven't seen a lot of Revolut stuff lately, and I see an
I don't see their marketing.
I don't see it
here
at all.
In America.
And I've seen I see N26 or buses branded with N26 billboards or ads. Basically every day now. It's incredible. At least in the Bay Area.
Maybe it's East Coast focused more. Maybe they're starting regionally. I'm not sure.
Why. I think you want to go. Because they have a national charter, right? A national license. So, yeah. It wouldn't make sense.
Well, it still costs money to expand. So
True.
Maybe.
Yeah.
We'll see.
Yeah.
So they have everything going on. They're working on partnerships with Visa and MasterCard. So just about anything we've talked about on this podcast... Revolut is going through.
That's
basically
awesome.
They're doing foreign exchange, they're partnering, their APIs,
payments.
Sure. And they're focusing on investments. Actually, it's interesting, they say they're looking for investors who can write checks for at least $50 to $100 million.
Nice.
So that's why you haven't heard anything from them or seen their marketing.
I'm sure it just went to my spam.
You can do only about 30 or 40, right?
Just about.
Dollars.
That's my limit, yes.
Yeah.
I can bet you that right now.
We'll put the link in the show notes on this one. It's kind of interesting that they're going through so many different challenges. Everything a fintech would have to go through.
Yep.
The hiring, one more interesting thing. They're going from 1,800 people, and they're targeting to have 5,000 by late next year. So that's why he's a hiring machine right now, the CEO there.
Sounds like it.
Uh, All right. Now it's time for our final bite, where we take a look at a number and the fascinating story behind it.
What you got, John?
Oh, well, my final bite is 33%. Not my raise this year by a long shot, but it is the amount, the number of people who trade in their cars to buy new ones who had negative equity in their vehicle.
So in plain language, that means that you owe more than the car is worth in your vehicle? Is that what it is?
They owe more than what you get in the trade-in. So that,
and you're still buying a new car.
So, and you buy a new car. Right, right. So that's through the first 9 months of 2019. And that compares to, so about a third. So about 10 years ago, that was only about 19% of people that did that.
So is this one of those indicators that foretells the looming financial crisis?
It's all bad. Everything's
it's all bad.
Going south.
It's all bad indicators.
Yeah, yeah. So what happens when you have negative equity on your car and you buy a new car is?
You get more debt.
You have more, a lot more debt. Yeah, yeah. This is a very concerning trend.
Why would you do this?
Yeah, I was wondering that myself, actually.
How would you do that?
And so I read carefully on the individual stories they mentioned. They have two examples. And in one case, the guy didn't really say why. He did have some troubles. So first, he went through a divorce.
Mm-hmm.
So I assume she got the car. He just mentions that as the reason.
Mm-hmm.
And then he has a new family. Well, I guess that explains the divorce.
That explains a lot.
She found out about the other family.
Sure.
Maybe.
A secret family.
If you're that guy, I have no idea. But so he had to get a, then he went to the third car and he had to get a bigger car for this new family. And so he ended up with a $45,000 loan for a $27,000 car.
Jesus Christ.
Would not help you in that case.
Would not help you in that case, though.
Right, right. So there's just some things happen, I guess. In another case, the borrower, she bought a used car, apparently, and then it broke down and she refused to make payments on it. So they repossessed it. They sold the car in repossession for $2,500.
A song, yes.
Then they said she still owed $27,000 on it.
Incredible.
So they didn't really try that hard to get the best value out of it. They didn't care because they're going to go after you anyway, apparently.
Yeah.
Because maybe I would have paid $5,000 for that car and then flipped it. I mean.
Yeah, it seems like, again, it's probably not a very transparent market either. Right?
Yeah. Oh, I'm sorry. They got $2,400 for it. Yeah.
Oh,
and they
okay.
said she still owed $27,000. So they've...
So even less.
They've gone after her. And actually, there's another... There's a more interesting one where they had these people in their early 20s, apparently with no student debt, because they went into it together and got rid of a car that they still owed $12,500 on.
Mm-hmm.
And they got a new GMC Sierra truck. I guess they wanted the newest, just a new car, because
sure.
you're in your early 20s. And,
yeah.
you know, it's just money. It's not real, right?
Yeah.
And so now they owe $66,000 for this Sierra truck.
Oh
they
God.
Said they wanted to go all out on this. And their payment went from $500 to $900 a month.
These people could use maybe some automated advice.
And it's an 84-month loan on top of that.
Oh, awesome. Yeah.
So seven long years. So anyways, that's pretty long for my final bite, but it's all bad news.
It's all bad news. It's
in
all
the auto market.
Doom and gloom, yeah.
And, you know, this was already kind of like a warning area like a year and a half ago, or actually starting 2 years ago, where they said the auto market was going to soften. I think the overall economy was expected to slow down, but they just saw these debt levels, a slowdown in overall trends. But the market has stayed strong, but on the back, the auto industry has stayed relatively strong. But now we can see the underlying current is all this debt that's been supporting that.
Terrible.
So there will be a come down because it's been a long time coming.
Yeah, yeah.
So
fascinating.
If you're an auto lending fintech, you know, look at your business plan a little.
look at your business plan a little. Always good advice. Sage advice from John.
Yeah. Great. Just take a look. Another look.
Just have a look, yeah. Thanks, John. So my final bite isn't exactly a number. It's more of a multiplier, and that is 10x.
Does that count?
I think it counts. I think we can let it slide.
We'll let variables in.
Well, sure, absolutely.
X's and Y's.
Yeah. It's all in there. So this is big news on Twitter maybe earlier this week, but Steve Wozniak, the co-founder of Apple, applied for an Apple Card. And his wife also applied for an Apple Card. And guess what?
She was declined.
She wasn't declined, but his credit limit was 10 times what she got, and they share all finances, which is fascinating. So they have the same background, same presumably assets, right? Pretty high, I assume, for Steve Wozniak. And her limit was 1/10 of his. How does this happen?
Yeah. I was like, maybe the you know, some things are in his name, but they said all the assets, everything is in both
everything was
names.
Both names. Yeah. So,
well, maybe name recognition.
It could be that as well. I don't know.
Wozniak. Yeah. Steve Wozniak.
Sure. Who's this guy? But apparently,
if one limit was $100,000 and the other limit was $1 million, I mean.
Maybe.
He's the founder?
Maybe.
But, or just plain old gender discrimination.
Or it could just be sexism, yeah. So the this is interesting, not just because it's Steve Wozniak and he could find Apple, but also because it gets to the unexplainability of some AI algorithms.
The black box problem.
Absolutely, yeah. So this is all based on whatever underwriting program Apple and Goldman Sachs are using, but it's given women a much, and he also wasn't the first one. There's a few people on Twitter who chimed in also with their experiences, and it seems like women are getting lower credit card limits than men.
Yeah, it looks like they're being investigated now. Goldman Sachs is the underwriter.
Yep.
And they're being investigated by New York.
By the New York State Department of Financial Services, yeah, which is a very powerful, fine-heavy regulator.
Yes, I'm sure Goldman is very familiar with them.
I'm sure they are, yeah.
But they're looking. It'd be interesting to see if there's some what's going on in their algorithm.
I would love to see how they can explain the algorithm, yeah.
Female absolutely. Name, divide by 10.
Yeah.
I mean, it couldn't be that simple. All right, that's it for this episode of the FinTech Newscast. Please hit subscribe to keep up with the latest in FinTech news, and thanks for listening.
Ciao.